Mini episode 997 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 997. We are breaking down the NBA Finals here today. It is a recap. Of course, good friends Joe Stazak and Steve Callis going through this with me. And in looking at this, I'll start with you, Joe. When you look at the finals themselves, I'm going to reference back to the preview that Ben Chu and I did leading into the finals, where all there really basically was to go over was, in terms of the potential miracle scenario, four games out of seven, Cavs playing a perfect game and somehow managing to just kind of sneak past. And that's really been the story of the finals the last 2 years, because Game 3 in 2017, that was one that was blown right at the end there. And then, again, Games 1 and Games 3 this year, much the same story. Games 2 and 4, certainly not perfect games on the parts of the Cavs, and you saw what happened, all things being equal. So, again, this particular dynamic between these teams, we've seen it play out to this point. I know from my perch on the North Coast what it was looking like, being as personally invested as I was. But starting with you, Joe, from a national perspective, what were you seeing as it was playing out?
Well, for me, the NBA playoffs this year, it was all about LeBron James. And every year he get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and surpass himself, every game. It seemed like, oh, but now he did that. Oh, now he did that. Oh, he did that. How about that? And it was like almost becoming, kind of commonplace. I mean, he had been formed in Indiana. His squad took them to a four-game sweep over Toronto, a couple buzzer beaters, some ridiculous, theatrics at the end of some of those games. And then he won game 6 and 7. I shouldn't say him. The Cavaliers won game 6 and 7, game 7 in Boston. But you know what I mean. I'm trying to be, diplomatic here. But it's LeBron and the rest of the team. Anytime you just look at numbers at the end of a postseason, one guy has 20 more points per game than the next guy. This is the second guy on his team. I mean, he's carrying the load. And it was impressive. Finally got Boston to lose a game at home, and he kind of did it rather handily, and then he gets to the finals. God bless him. Again, in game one, everyone's expecting to pull out in four games, puts up 51 points, and the rest of his team, George Hill gets off the hook for this, by the way. Everyone's pounding Jarrett Smith, and rightfully so. George Hill misses the free throw. Smith, loses his mind, can't remember the score, and then the air went out of the balloon at that point in game one, and then they got rolled in overtime. And LeBron, I don't blame him for punching the whiteboard, although he should have punched it with his left hand.
Absolutely.
game three got close for a while, and then they pulled away. In games two and game four, game four, you lose an elimination game at home by 23 points. If you want to talk about Golden State a little bit, it's almost, for them, it's a shame they didn't choke up the second almost championship, and LeBron did one of those Herculean efforts to take his team through that game seven win over Golden State. Because Golden State has three now in the last 6 years. Showtime only has four, and they could easily have four Golden State, and they don't seem like they're going anywhere anytime soon. Durant said he wants to stay. Steph Curry's still doing his thing. You have Klay Thompson, although at the end of next year, Klay Thompson's a free agent. We'll see what that brings. But, this team, although this year, it seemed to be a little disinterested at times, and maybe that comes, complacency comes with as much success as they've had. So some might call it, cracks in the armor. Some might call it complacency. They almost got eliminated by Houston. If Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, we don't know what happened in that series. But again, they got killed in a couple of those games, and if that helped out, from 27 for three, 3 points, that helped. But again, but they flipped that switch, and you're leading by 10, 8, 12 points, and the next thing you know, you're down 5, and it's like a minute 30 off the clock. That's how quickly they score. They score in transition. They're very fast to change positions and change the court. And they shoot on the run. They shoot threes. They make threes. If one guy is slow one night, another guy gets hot. You know, and if two guys are off, it plays option. And Durant takes over. I mean, he's, you know, a 7-footer who can shoot three-pointers with, you know, pretty good accuracy. So tough to overcome that. You know, I personally think, I don't know if we're going to get into this a little bit more, but that was LeBron's last game in Cleveland. I mean, you can see the frustration on his face, and I don't know how they get him more help quickly, because I know he only has a few years left, and I think he wants to take and run at some more rings, but I could be wrong. But I think these playoffs are pretty much all about LeBron, and he was sensational.
Quick counterpoint on George Hill there, Joe. I just want to get what you think about this. As we discussed on your show, the thing about the Cavs, and I've said that it is the big misnomer, is that everybody except for the big two on this team sucks. It's not that that's the case. It's extreme inconsistency. Which version are you going to get of J.R. Smith, George Hill, Jeff Green, et cetera, et cetera? George Hill, again, and he just completely pooped his pants in the finals here. He did not show up at all. The only counterpoint I have to make is he hits that free throw. Golden State calls timeout. It's better than 50-50. They probably hit a buzzer beater from wherever anyways, is it not?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, they get the ball at half court. They got 4 seconds left.
Yeah. That's my only thing is that, but I think you're right though. That's, people are sleeping on George Hill, not because of what I just said, but like you said, they're forgetting that he missed the free throw. I think that's the thing that people are tending to forget about, and where he kind of gets off light. But in a way, it's kind of fitting because it's more than one person on this team that let down LeBron, which is sort of the situation writ large. So you know, we'll get to the LeBron thing here subsequently, but before we do, Steve, your thoughts on the finals, how it shaped up. Again, another historic performance from LeBron, at least in the opening game, and then games 2, 3, and 4, very good LeBron performances. You don't get bad LeBron performances, even by his standards, in the finals, but again, whether that took a little bit out of him psychologically, certainly physically after that, but again, I think Joe was right. LeBron is a huge story of these finals, as well as, again, you just look at it, hey, the way Golden State stacked the deck with this talent lineup, and it kind of played out in exactly that way.
Well, I think it was kind of fascinating because Joe and I did the podcast. We did a lot of radio in Philly, and essentially it was, even going back to Game 7 in Indiana, where so many people thought Indiana was going to win, and I just went on with Joe and said, they got to put a stake through in the Eastern Conference, and I don't see how Indiana's going to beat them, or Toronto, or even Boston, all the way down to Game 7. He just can do so much. You know, Toronto was going to beat them. I mean, that's like a comedy show. I didn't think they'd sweep them, but that's, you know, there was no chance that Toronto was going to beat them. And even as good as the Celtics were, and, you know, the great Brad Stevens, who is a brilliant coach, but somehow he put Terry Rozier in with like 5 minutes left for Jaylen Brown. At the time, Rozier was 0 for 8 from 3, and I think Jaylen Brown was like 3 for 10 or something. And he put him in with 5 minutes left. It was a game. It wasn't a game, and he put Jaylen Brown back in. And in the interim, you know, Beer went on Starks and missed two more threes, so he was 0 for 10 in the game 7, and I think Starks was like 0 for 11 from 3, I'm talking about. And I thought that was a colossal mistake. But, you know, the Celtics are coming. They just, you know, I'll say it again, you got to put a stake through this guy's heart. What I found interesting about the finals, and I wasn't around, but my father used to tell me, you know, that Bobby Thompson home run that shot heard around the world in the 51 playoffs Dodgers-Giants, and it was the biggest home run in the, still voted recently, I think, the greatest home run in the history of baseball. And when I was a little kid, my father used to talk about that because he was a lifelong New York guy, grew up in Hell's Kitchen, lifelong Yankee fan, played in the Yankees organization 2 years as a catcher, minor leaguer before he went into the service. When he was in the service was the only time he was never in New York. And he said to me, yeah, I never understood that. They were just playing for the right to lose to the Yankees. And the Yankees were in the middle of winning 5 World Series in a row. 2 years. as exciting as the Eastern Conference playoffs were, and the Indiana series was exciting, the Boston series was incredible, Boston Cavs, but to me, they were just playing for the right to lose to Golden State. I didn't think it would be a sweep. We should mention that call in game one, the block charge,
yes,
which I still find fascinating that there's a rule where you can review a judgment call, but in order to bring the rule that you can review a judgment call into play, you have to say, oh, I wasn't sure if LeBron was in the restricted area, but LeBron wasn't even close to the restricted area.
No.
He was a good 2 feet, maybe more beyond, so that was a misjudgment. I think they eventually got the call right, and that's what people say, oh, they got the call right. But never in the history of the NBA has a big playoff game been decided, and that gave Durant 2 free throws, which tied the game, didn't win the game, but tied the game. And I just thought that was wrong, and I can understand LeBron's frustration. I did say to Joe, at least punch it lefty if you're going to punch it. But again, I thought this was a non-series. I think I said it was going to go 5 games, maybe 6. I thought they'd get one. They should have won the first, I thought, because of that call, Rick. Not necessarily, I know what you're saying, even if Hill had hit the field goal. But if that stays a charge, Cleveland has the ball up, too, with like 35 seconds left in the game.
Right.
That's a different deal. And if they decide to defend, which they probably would with 35 seconds left, and LeBron makes one of those ridiculous shots he made throughout the playoffs, then they're up 4, and the game's over. So, again, not that they were going to win 4 games. They weren't. And game 3 was kind of close, but I think it kind of ripped the heart out of a lot of the guys, even though they put on a brave face. And when you look at the shot charts, LeBron took, you know, very few threes after game 1. I don't know if he broke his hand, but he certainly hurt it. I never heard an exact diagnosis of an x-ray and a broken hand. But, you know, he had 51 in the first. Sorry? No, he had 51 in the first game, and it's exactly what you said. He had very good games the other three, but they weren't superstar LeBron games like they were in game 1. So, overall, you kind of knew this was going to happen. I thought it was just a matter of what the games were going to be. And frankly, the biggest news in the NBA, bigger than the finals, of course, is what's going to happen forward-looking. This has to be the craziest, because of LeBron, the craziest offseason in NBA history as well.
Well, you've got a lot of that going on. I will say, this may not surprise you guys to know this, but what you were saying about the officiating was also noticed here on America's North Coast. We were noting that with some passionate interest as far as the whistles and the way that they were going. And again, I believe that the league is still operating on the David Stern playbook, which to me means that they blew it, because, fellas, if you're putting a thumb on the scale, it's supposed to be to help this team. You know what I'm saying? You want the series to go longer. You can still have your beloved Warriors win in the end. They almost certainly would. But, yeah, it's like, what are you afraid of? Golden State's going to win this anyways. You know, you don't have to, you know, try your hardest to make it happen. They can do it on their own. But I thought also, too, the last note I have really about the series was that you saw the lack of Kyrie Irving in there in terms of the Cavs' playmaking, and that it was all on LeBron to make the plays, with George Hill being completely MIA. People talk about the Cavs quitting in the second half of Game 4. That's bullpucky. I was watching it, and it was like they didn't have any answers. They're basically lobbing it into the post, trying desperation things. That's a team where it's not their night. They got no answers. They're trying desperation things against a team so much better offensively and defensively. I didn't really get the sense that they quit so much as just were completely exposed as far as the talent differential between the teams, which, again, we knew all along going in, or I should say from my perspective, consistent talent differential, because the Cavs, most of the players on the team don't show up every night. The Golden State Big Four, you get enough of a semblance of them every night, or at least close to it, that it matters. In turning to you, Joe, this is one of these things, you know, we make a lot out of this this big, broad country of ours with many different regions that we have. There's different pronunciations. There's different ways of saying certain words in certain places. I can tell you that the pronunciation, I'd say for the last year or so, on America's North Coast, for the word narrative has been narrative. Because if you live here, you are sick of the vulture media just poking and prodding and what the hell's going to happen with LeBron. It's bringing out the crabby old man in me. I'm in full get off my lawn mode about that. And I can't even try to disguise it. So I really don't. But it's a thing where, again, what was funny was I caught the tape from when I hung up on your show there at the end of the call, the very next thing you said was, LeBron's gone. He's gone. So that was kind of, I thought that was outstanding, by the way. But, as far as it goes with that, obviously that's part of the narrative, but there is the aspect as well. About, again, what the family wants, what the family is going to make happen. I think Dan Gilbert does see which way the wind is blowing, because this recent caca, allegedly from his camp, about how this team can win without LeBron, all I got to say is, how'd it go last time we had to try that? So, obviously, yeah, I mean, in the last several weeks, the arrows have been pointing far, far in the other direction. I don't believe that it was a done deal for any of these other cities all along, the way people are saying. I believe that factors have conspired to make it more possible. But I'll start with you, Joe, on this. You got some other things here, too, whether it be the recent tumult in Philadelphia there, the thoughts of how he's going to fit together with Ben Simmons if he goes there, the immaturity of some of the young Laker players potentially out there, and are you going to be able to get Paul George to come with you? What I have been saying all along is somebody might want to show me what this perfect scenario is. You got James Harden, who's a ball hog in his own right in Houston, so he very possibly is going to pick one of these situations here. But again, the notion that any of these are a slam dunk because they're custom set up for someone of his skills to fit in with the other players there, I just don't see that. Doesn't mean it won't happen, but I don't see it as far as, oh, this is a great situation. It's so obvious.
Yeah, Rick, I am at a loss at this point. I really am. Steve and I have been talking about this last September. Now, the LeBron sweepstakes have pushed it up, and I go from week to week thinking maybe he's leaning here, maybe he's leaning there. I don't think he knows where he's going yet.
Right.
He probably has an idea where he might be leaning, but I don't think you ask him straight up, off the record. I don't know, because to mention, the Lakers are young. He doesn't like playing with children. He really doesn't, and they're somewhat immature. And even if he brings Paul George with him, then they have to get rid of one of their maybe young guys like Lonzo Ball or maybe Brandon Ingram, and they have to build that team. I know his family. He likes LA. He's got some businesses out there. But I really think, his Lonzo, he wants to win a couple more rings. I mean, hell, if he wants to not win some rings, with your respect, you can stay in Cleveland. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It'd be nice if Philadelphia had a general manager at this point. They don't. they have two young guys. Neither of them shoot. They do. I mean, they are stars, but we transcend the stars in this league. They don't shoot. They have another first overall pick who doesn't shoot for reasons unknown. Me and Steve have been beating our heads over on the wall trying to figure out why Markel Fultz has to play this year. they don't have transition guys who can shoot the three. It's an okay spot for him. I'm not sure if the city's maybe on the top of his list. I don't know that. I think if Chris went by cities, probably like to go to LA. Now, Houston's interesting because if Chris Paul, can stay healthy, which he hasn't been able to, he's played less games, fewer games in each of the last 4 years. We know he missed games 6 and 7. That's not a bad spot for him, having Harden and Paul and LeBron. If the Celtics are a dark horse, but I think if they're interested and could make that work, I think that would be the spot for him. I don't know if he wants to play there or not. I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know where he wants to play, to be honest with you. But I think if there was a best-case scenario for LeBron, if he wanted to stay in the East, I think it would be Boston. And they could finagle some things. Kyrie, there's talk that he might want to go to the Knicks. He's got one more year on his contract. You know what I mean? I'm sure Kyrie wouldn't be all that psyched following him to Boston, but Danny Ainge could make it work. Having said that, like a week and a half ago, I thought I was leaning back towards LA, and then these knuckleheads come out with this, they're rapping against each other and having contests, and Lonzo Ball making this video. It was actually a cute video, but with his dad. The problem's not into that. He wants to play with adults, I think. I don't think he wants to, bring up young guys that are kind of act a little immature. So to be honest, to answer your question, I have no idea where he's going. I'd love to see him in Philadelphia. You know that. I think, you know, 50-50 chance. I'm going to say that it's down to the Lakers and Philadelphia.
Very interesting. I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well, Steve, because, again, it's a field that's really pretty wide open. And as I said on Joe's show the last time I was on there, I'm very curious for why it's been said over a period of time LeBron will not consider the Clippers, that they're a team that's got the cap room, that, I mean, they could probably fit him and Chris Paul to come in there. And, you know, there's the thought, I've heard it said by some people that, oh, well, that's the B team in L.A. I'm like, yeah, he could also be the guy who got the Cavs and the Clippers a championship. You think that doesn't put you on Mount Rushmore if you can do that? So, you know, I don't understand that, because the Clippers are a situation that could be viable otherwise, and the fact that they got Jerry West there now, who LeBron does respect, maybe if they're, I'm going to call my shot. If there is a dark horse in this, it's the Clippers, because they make too much sense otherwise. Do you agree, Steve, that there are no super obvious choices out there the way that the media narratives will have you believe that there is?
Well, I think you make a good point, Rick, and that is the whole problem for LeBron. And I'll say one other thing, and certainly LeBron is smart enough to know this. The league has literally changed in the last 2 or 3 years because of Golden State. You saw the future of the league, I thought, in the Houston-Golden State series, and that is, in a few years, you're going to have teams that take more threes than twos. The analytics guys are involved now, and the reason Houston lost, I agree with Joe, is they went 0-27, and I saw on ESPN the stats, while they were going 0-27, that's double John Starks. They were 15. I'm almost over that, Rick. I'm almost over that. That's only, you know, 24 years ago. But interestingly, and again, I saw this on ESPN. I did not know this. While they were going 0-27 from three, they went 15-21 from two. So I know Mike D'Antoni is Mr. Offense and Mr. 3, but at some point, maybe, I don't know, 0-8, 0-12, 0-15, 0-20, maybe he would have said, yeah, maybe we should, like, pound the ball inside a little, not knowing that they shot 72% from 2 while they were going 0% from 3. But I think the future is now, and these are the kind of games you're going to see. I don't necessarily like the way the game is going. It looks pretty much like threes or dunks, frankly. But that's where we are. So the problem for LeBron is, where is he going to show up? When he shows up, he's Kevin Durant to Golden State. He walks in, he's better than everybody, no matter who's on the team. And I don't know where that is. I like Philly because I thought, and I always couched it early in the season and before the season, if those two guys stayed healthy and those two guys stayed healthy. But Joe makes a good point. Simmons can't shoot at all. Embiid shoots threes, but, you know, unless he's standing flat-footed right straight from the basket, he doesn't make a lot of them. He can make those. But you really need, and the beauty of Golden State, I guess, and we've also talked about this all year, they have a big four. So wherever LeBron goes, I think he needs a big four. He had a big three with Cleveland, and he really couldn't win. Once Durant came and they got a big four, it's just no fair. So I don't know where he goes to a big four. I actually read an article today where somehow somebody thought he calls up Paul George, they go to the Lakers, and the Lakers somehow swing a deal for Kawhi Leonard. Now, I don't know if that's possible because I don't know, A, if Leonard's healthy, B, does he want to stay in San Antonio. I'm going to guess he doesn't because they're not winning. Popovich is great. They're not winning anymore. The time is gone for them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Even if Leonard stays. I don't think LeBron would go, but maybe he would. I will say one thing. In one of those final press conferences, Game 3 or Game 4, he talked at length. Now, look, it sounded like he was a little self-serving, essentially saying, you know, I don't have enough talent to beat these guys. But he was talking about guys you need to build the team are guys with experience, with big basketball on shoes, been around for a while. Now, that might take Philly, as good as they are, out of the mix. Although I still think if he shows up and they get a couple more jump shooters, Reddick comes back and plays for free. I've said he got $23 million this year. If LeBron goes down to Philly, he should go play for the minimum. Just my opinion. It's easy for me to say. But the point is, you can't just have – the beauty of Golden State is three of their big four are unbelievable three-point shooters. And virtually unstoppable when you have like a guy like Durant, who has the best mid-range game in the league. I mean, he's unstoppable when he goes inside 15, 12, 18 feet. he's unstoppable. Nobody can guard him. He's 7 foot and shoots over his head. I mean, he did it all, especially in the finals. He did it. Nobody, not LeBron, nobody can stop him. So I think the problem for LeBron, I just don't think he can get enough guys to come to Cleveland, Rick. That's the problem, I think, for Cleveland. But I have to tell you, and you know this, Rick, I was in Oberlin, Ohio the night of the decision. My son was just starting, you know, he was going to go to Oberlin. We were there. And we walked down from the hotel right after the decision, and people were coming out cursing, crying. You know, you saw the burning jerseys the next day. I don't think it'll be as bad this time because he did deliver on what he promised. And I read somewhere, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, Rick, that his mother didn't even want him to go back to Cleveland because of the Dan Gilbert letter, which still has to be in the back of his mind. That was a pretty vicious letter that was made public. And he did do the job, though. He did bring Cleveland the championship, and I just don't think he's bringing any more. In terms of what he wants to do, family and all that, which he mentioned, I heard him say a couple times a few years ago he'd like to get 6 championships. He wants to tie Michael Jordan. Now, I don't know if he can do that anywhere, but he has to go to a team, I think, that in 3 years from now, when he's not LeBron anymore, that the next guys coming up are super-duper stars. That's why I think Philly could be a good option, because I think Embiid and Simmons are going to be super-duper stars, although Simmons has to work on his shot. And again, I think Embiid should just stand at the three-point line directly behind the foul line, in line with the basket, and only shoot those threes. He'll shoot 40% from there. But you're right. I think the point you made that is the best point is there is no place. Houston, maybe, but James Harden, people talking about Simmons and LeBron, they can't play together. I totally disagree with that. But Harden and LeBron?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a problem. But as Bill said, you know, they took him to 7. They didn't have Chris Paul. They almost beat him. The D'Antoni way is my way or the highway. We'll take 53s. If we go 0-for-40, we're still taking more threes.
Right.
So that didn't quite work out this year. But with Chris Paul, I think he would have settled them down. And I thought they had a good chance to win if Paul had played. And Boston is an interesting option, too. I just don't know if I see a little bit. And they have to get rid of Kyrie, because Kyrie will be pulling his hair out. This guy's coming here? Also, I just got here. but you're right. I think the best point is the one you made, and that is you can't say he should go there, because there is no there. They're 6. He should go maybe. And it's also going to be who he can call up and talk into coming with him.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you what, I'll bring it full circle on this note, gentlemen. I'm going to tie together two things you said, Steve, as far as not getting over things from back in the day when you mentioned John Starks there and your pain and seeing that. And you also mentioned today's modern NBA and how three-point-centric it is. And to tie it all together, here's what I got. You know, one of the great early three-point shooters in the history of the league, I used to watch him and cheer him on back at the old Richfield Coliseum, good old Del Curry. Talk about not getting over things, man. Every Cavs fan right now wishes he had a vasectomy back in the day. And I think the league would look a lot different if it did. So, I appreciate you guys being on. Thanks very much. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 997.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.